Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
We know the US President Donald Trump paused military aid to Ukraine following his clash with the Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky last week. Well, just now, the Ukrainian Prime Minister has been speaking at a press conference in Kyiv, saying that they are determined to continue their cooperation with the United States. They say that American military aid is critical. It helps save thousands of lives. And perhaps most importantly, he says Ukraine is ready to sign the minerals deal with the United States. Let's get reaction to this now. I'm joined first by Susie Moore, who's Deputy Managing Editor at RedState.com. So we've heard that in the last few minutes. Ukraine, it says, ready, Susie, to sign the minerals deal. This is what Donald Trump wanted all along, isn't it?
I believe so. I mean, I think that was the intention and the understanding of what was going to happen last Friday. And good morning, Claire. I should have sort
of started
with
that.
But yeah, I think that that was what the Trump administration was expecting to happen last Friday, with President Zelensky coming to Washington to speak with them. And I know that they certainly were disappointed that it didn't happen then. So I do think that this is what we were trying to get to. And hopefully this is a good sign.
But how do you feel about the decision made by the Trump administration overnight to pause the military aid to Ukraine? We've heard this morning just how important it is for Ukraine. It saves thousands of lives.
Certainly. And I understand why people might be concerned about that. I think that is an effort by the Trump administration to demonstrate that they are serious about trying to get this mineral deal signed and about trying to get Ukraine to get to a point where they can get maybe some peace talks going. So I think some might characterize it as hardball. But I also think that that shows the level of seriousness involved here, and that there's a determination on the part of this president and this administration to hopefully bring a conclusion to the war.
Going back to that meeting on Friday, we have EU leaders, including Germany's likely next chancellor, Friedrich Merz, claiming that that clash in the Oval Office was likely a deliberate escalation by the United States. So in other words, an escalation by Donald Trump, and in particular by J.D. Vance. What's your response to that accusation, Susie?
Well, I've seen some people claim that, and I guess I can understand that. When I first saw it, I came in towards the very end, and I didn't know what had led up to it. I didn't have the full context of it. And if you only saw from the point where the clash kind of really escalated between Zelensky and Vance and then Trump, I could understand why someone might have that impression. But when you go back and look at the entire interaction, and you look at the history leading up to that, that's not how it comes across at all.
What changes for you in the context of the entire interaction?
Coming to understand that there had been an attempt when our Secretary of Treasury, Scott Bessent, was in Kyiv earlier in February to get the deal signed, and then there was a discussion and a plan that it was going to be signed when Vice President Vance and Secretary of State Marco Rubio were in Munich, and then that President Zelensky asked to come to the White House to sign it, and then realizing that they had been there speaking for 30 minutes before Vance jumped in to respond to a reporter's question about the difference between the Biden administration and the Trump administration and their approach to trying to get some sort of peace talks going. And then that's when President Zelensky directed his comments to Vice President Vance, and that's where things seemed to really go off the rails. Mm-hmm. So I think, I understand people are going to Their own perspective on the players involved is going to color how they perceive the interaction. And so I do understand that, but I can tell you honestly myself, having had those two different reactions, I'm pretty comfortable with now having a fuller understanding of it, that this was not a setup by the U.S. I think that President Trump and Vice President Vance genuinely thought, we're going to come in, do this nice ceremony, sign this deal, then we'll have a press conference later. And then things went off the rails.
How did you feel about a man who has been defending his country in the face of Russian aggression for the last 3 years being tackled in public in the Oval Office over his clothes?
So, that was interesting. I mean, people remark on that. And I guess I'm one of those people that sees both sides of it, if that makes sense. I understand he's in wartime. And so that's one of the, that's the the image that he is wants to kind of remind people of. And so that's his prerogative. And I think I was not a fan of the question asked by the reporter of him in that setting. I felt like that was a little unnecessarily confrontational. Mm-hmm. President Trump kind of ribbed him about it when he showed up, and then I don't think he was going to say anything more about it. So I feel like a whole lot is being made of that, particularly since the reporter asked that question. And in the whole scheme of things, I don't think that's what really matters to anyone. So I don't know. I see both sides of it. I'm a former attorney, so I know.
But you don't seem to be overly comfortable with the fact that happened. Just coming back then, Susie, to the wider issue, because here, I mean, on this side of the Atlantic, what's happening is being seen by many as a victory for Russia, because a weakened Ukraine strengthens the hand of Vladimir Putin in his illegal invasion. But that, am I right in saying, is not how Donald Trump's decision on aid, military aid, is being seen in the United States?
I think it's being seen as an effort on his part to get President Zelensky back to getting this deal, the minerals deal done, and then proceeding on to see if we can get some peace talks done. In other words, I think people who understand that Donald Trump is, you know, we always go back to it, but The Art of the Deal is his book, and he is a negotiator, and he is someone who likes to negotiate deals. Most people, I think, who understand that about him recognize that this is an effort to, it's basically a leverage to try and get President Zelensky back to the table.
Mm-hmm. But it does more than that, doesn't it? It makes life easier for Russia and for Vladimir Putin.
It does if it continues on and doesn't affect the, you know, the negotiation strategy. But as you all were noting at the top of the news there, it sounds as though Ukraine, at least their prime minister, has said that they are now ready to sign the deal. And hopefully that's what happens. And hopefully that is something that, once it's in place, can actually help pave the way to bringing a conclusion to this war.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about tariffs in just a moment. And I want to get your take on that, because, you know, he has said that he was going to work on the cost of living. That was his big pitch to the American people last November. Are people in the United States feeling like he's got a handle on that issue? Do you feel there's been any action in that regard? Because there are many who will say now, with these tariffs coming into effect, that actually everyday goods will become much more expensive.
Sure. No, I understand that. I think people are giving him a bit of a grace period, and maybe more than they would if he was not taking making so many moves, taking so many executive actions. I think most people understand that his moves toward making America energy dominant again, and taking away some of the regulations, the DOGE efforts. His Secretary of Agriculture is working on getting the egg supply address, those sorts of things. So I think people are seeing those moves and recognizing that those are all pieces being moved into place that should help bring those prices down. The tariffs themselves, we're going to have to see how that shakes out. But I think that people right now are willing to give him a little bit of a grace period. He's been in office for just a little over 40 days now. If this goes on for, let's say, 3 months, 6 months, and we're not seeing any movement on that, then I think you're going to start seeing people really get frustrated and start about that.
Okay, Susie, thank you very much. Susie Moore there from redstate.com. Tony Foley is with us, Emeritus Associate Professor of Economics at DCU Business School. Tony, thanks for joining us this morning. So
no problem.
To talk about these tariffs and what is likely to happen. We have China and Canada. They've already announced retaliatory measures. And the worry is, as I was saying to Susie there, that the sweeping tariffs are going to drive up costs for businesses and consumers in the months ahead. We're probably not likely to be immune from that here too. But let's talk about the United States economy. What do you think the threat to that economy is, firstly?
Oh, it's going to lower the growth rate. That's no doubt. That if he goes ahead with his tariff plan, some of the estimates suggest that that could take up to 0.5% off the US growth rate. Its inflation figures are not great. Inflation in January was higher than envisaged, back to 3%. On an annual basis, and tariffs will push that up further. There is only one extreme case where tariffs wouldn't do that, and that's a situation. Suppose, for example, BMW are exporting cars to the US, and a tariff of 25% is put on it. And BMW say, well, we want to keep our market share, so we'll improve our efficiency, we'll take lower profits, and we'll absorb the 25% tariff.
Mm-hmm.
So the car then in the United States stays the same price. But that's the only extreme case in which tariffs would not push up prices. So the question is, how much of the tariff is manifest in a higher price for consumers and also for producers? Because say, for example, Canada supplies a lot of lumber, wood, cement and so on to the United States. Their inputs to the construction industry. So then the construction industry operates have to operate with higher prices and they push up prices. And of course, we have the classic case of the avocados. That the avocados all basically come from Mexico, so they'll put a tariff. They'll put the price of the tariff onto it. The suppliers of avocados will look for higher prices, and prices will go up. I wouldn't be so sanguine as your previous commentator on the public reaction to prices. There's a very recent CNN poll which says that 62% of Americans feel Trump is not doing enough about inflation, and that 62% will start dropping to 55-54% when the effect of tariffs come through. And I think that will be felt more in terms of consumers getting a little bit disenchanted because Trump himself has kind of rode back.
You mean the percentage of people who feel he's not doing enough
exactly.
That will go up
and it
could be a problem for him. But he has said, hasn't he, that there will be short-term pain.
Yes.
He
didn't say that in the election.
He said it afterwards.
The foreigners would bear the price of the tariff. Mm. But that's not going to happen except in the extreme case I mentioned.
But you can't
but now
argue.
Now he's saying, yeah, it'll take a little bit longer. Short-term pain for longer-term gain.
But Tony, he is doing what he said he would do.
Oh, he did. I have my list here. If you look at the kind of things he was saying when he went into it, deal with immigration. Yes, he's kind of done well in that. The public like that. Government expenditure, he'll take basically a wrecking ball to it. He seems to be doing that. MAGA, make America great. Let people stop taking advantage of it. The tariffs are all seen in terms of that respect. Aid to Ukraine, just giving away American money. He's pulling back on that. Prices is the not particularly good one. And basically fentanyl, you would argue that some of the tariffs with Mexico and Canada were designed to curb the flow of fentanyl and the ingredients for it. So kind of a half success for that. But the economy would be a negative. That economic prospects are worse now because of Trump's arrival. Stock market prices are reflecting the impact of tariffs. So that'll have a declining impact on economic growth. But that overall, yes, he's been elected to do certain things, which you might like or not like, and he's doing them. And in the majority of the particular elements, he's doing reasonably well in terms of the public perception. But if we go back to the usual American argument, it's the economy that matters. What will matter to Americans will be prices, which he promised particularly to bring down. And say, for example, on Friday, job figures will be coming out. If they're not so good, it won't look so good for him because he does present himself as an economics genius. He's made his money and so on. He can get the economy going. He'd argue it never performed better than when he was president before. Now, you can quibble with all of those comments, but if the economy is not doing particularly well, he has trouble. But he is. Yeah. What surprised me just on the tariffs thing, I actually got it wrong, I have to admit. I thought when he said he'd bring in the tariffs for Canada and Mexico in the first place and then cancel them for a month.
Yes, that they'd never come back.
Continue on, that they wouldn't come back. But I have read that very often Donald Trump says something, sees how it runs, and because he doesn't mention it again for a while, you think it's gone away, but it's not gone away, and he comes back with it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's now basically arguing, okay, you've brought troops onto the border, you're curbing immigration to a certain extent, but you're not doing enough in fentanyl, so I'm bringing back the tariffs. So maybe these are just bargaining positions that he wants the tariffs back anyway.
Now, just looking at Europe, Tony, I want to talk about this before we finish, because there are people at a European level we know who were working out whether tariffs would happen. They heard him mention this during the campaign, but it seemed like a very faraway thing that might just be part of him wanting to dominate the headlines.
Yeah.
Today, that's an altogether different scenario.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And the case, I suppose, in many ways, it illustrates. See, we tend to look at Trump and say, oh, this is terrible and it's unreasonable and everything else. But from an American perspective, Trump often points to the case of cars, that EU car exports to the United States face a 2.5% tariff. Vehicle imports to the EU from the United States face a 10% tariff. Mm-hmm. So he basically looks at that and says, we're selling cars and it's a 10% tariff. We're buying cars and it's 2.5%. That's unfair. EU is taking advantage of us. So therefore, we want tariffs to be changed. Now, I suppose the historic, reasonable way of doing that would have been you'd negotiate with a particular country. You'd say, well, we want to reduce that tariff. You want to reduce that. You'd reach a bargain. You'd have a free trade agreement. Whereas his approach tends to be much more punch you in the face, basically, with a 25% tariff and see what happens after that.
All right.
But they would have some degree of criticism of the present trading arrangement. Now, of course, Europeans would say, yes, but they've got lower tariffs on this and we've got higher tariffs. And that's what ideally is solved mm-hmm. with negotiation, but not with his style. His style tends to be kick you first and see how you react and take it from there.
All right, we'll have to see how hard the kick is. Tony, thanks so much. Tony Foley there, Emeritus Professor of Economics at DCU. Coming up next, life after high-level sport. We're going to have four Irish sporting legends with us here in the studio to talk about what happens after the final whistle.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.